Dunabag is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Your data is your business. Protect it with ExpressVPN. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to the link listed in my Twitter profile.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Dunabag.
This episode, I welcome back Josh Yoey from The Athletic, and we are talking all things Penguins. It is a crazy time. It's Tuesday night. It is the night before free agency starts, and we are just speculating as to what is going to happen with the Penguins. What are they going to do? Are they going to make a lot of moves? Are they going to make no moves? Are they going to make trades? Who knows what? It's we talk about this in our talk, but Hextall is he's a good poker player. He won't tell you what's going on. He keeps things close to the vest. So it'll be very interesting. I think a lot's going to happen. I think he's going to get rid of some of the people he doesn't like and bring in some of the people he does like. So we're going to see what happens. So how's everybody doing? This is my first episode of the week, and if you noticed, it's episode 500. Not only is it episode 500, it is my 3-year anniversary doing this podcast. So, woohoo! Dang, I should really have some streamers or something like that, or one of those noisemakers. But yeah, 3 years, it's been pretty cool. There's some people I want to thank. First of all, I want to thank my family. They put up with this weird schedule. And sometimes the schedule is pretty crazy because, I have to fit it around when I could talk to people and things like that. So they have to put up with my schedule. They have to put up with me and my making noises, although I kind of have like my own little podcast studio. So that's, I try to stay away from them in that. But so I want to thank them for accommodating me. I want to thank all the people that I have had on as guests. I still cannot believe that I have gotten some of the people. Like, Josh Yoey is probably the number one hockey guy in Pittsburgh, number one hockey reporter. And, you know, it shocks me that he would come on the podcast and talk to me. I've had some amazing guests. I think the one that really, I still shake my head at, is Sally Wiggin. Sally Wiggin is a legend, and we got to talk about a year ago when the pandemic first started. So, I'm just so grateful of anybody that chose to spend time talking to me. I've had some amazing talks. I've had great times. So thankful for that. And the last person or people that I want to thank is anybody that's listening to this and anybody that has listened. I think I'm approaching 50,000 downloads or something like that. So I am just in shock when people tell me that they listen to the podcast, and that always surprises me. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. It has been a blast, and I hope to continue to do it. So anyway, here is my talk with Josh Yoey. The Dunabag starts right now. Let's just get started, because there's so much to talk about. We are. All right. So before the big news, let's go back a week or so and talk about the expansion draft. Why did they not like McCann? And why were they okay getting rid of losing Tanev?
Well, I think Tanev, first of all, was strictly financial. It's not that they didn't like him. They clearly valued him as a player. But I think they felt like, Teddy Bluger at $2 million a year, or $2.2 now, was a better bargain, a better deal than Brandon Tanev at $3.5 million a year. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but that was their thinking. And I also think, believe it or not, that Evgeny Malkin's health had something to do with it. Malkin's not going to be ready for the start of the season. And I don't know when he will be ready. They don't know yet either, but I think he could miss a significant chunk of time to start the season. So you're already down one center. If they would lose another one, you only have Crosby and Carter really left, and you can't expect Jeff Carter to do what he did last year. So I think that made Bluger that much more important for them to keep. As for McCann, I was a little confused by that. In fact, I still am. To me, with what he brings to the table at $2.9 million, that's a really good investment, in my opinion. I think it was one of the better contracts on the team, quite frankly. So I don't understand that. I will say this. Ron Hextall has a plan, and nobody really knows exactly what it is because he keeps things remarkably tight to the vest. He is the antithesis of Jim Rutherford in every way. So let's see what his plan is when free agency begins. Let's let things unfold. But on the surface, that still remains a curious trade to me.
Yeah. It just seems like, I mean, anytime there's a new GM of a team, there's going to be players, regardless of the sport, there's going to be players he likes, players he doesn't like from the old regime. So, you know, they, for some reason, but it just seemed like McCann, I think the biggest criticism of him was when he was on, he was streaky as hell and it was awesome. But when he was off, he was just in a huge drought. But then you could have said that about Brian Rust too. And he evened it out. So, you know, it seemed like with McCann, there was always that, well, he has potential. It's like maybe you just get tired of the potential. I don't know.
Well, I will say this, and I'm a McCann fan, so let me make that clear. But if you want to play devil's advocate, you could say, you know, he's already been on what, four different teams, and he's only 26. So there's something about him that rubs coaches in front office the wrong way. And I think with him, you know, you can make the argument, I have to be sensitive because of what's going on in the gymnastics world, et cetera. But you can make an argument that he is maybe a little mentally soft. And I say that because when he's in a slump, he will come out. He's very honest. He will come out and say, I have no confidence right now. I don't know what's wrong with me. Stuff that you don't usually hear hockey players say. Usually they will say things like, yeah, I just need a lucky bounce and I'll be back on track, which really means the same thing. But he will tell you, like, I'm just mentally off right now, and I have no confidence in my game. And then he would go on a 20-game goalless drought, right? Or game without a game. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that rubs coaches the wrong way. It wouldn't shock me if it does. Hockey remains a pretty macho business where, you know, you were supposed to project confidence at all times, right? And McCann didn't always do that. But that said, he's a really quality human being, for one thing. And I thought, tell me if you disagree, Joey, but I thought he was one of their best players last season. I really did. I thought he was outstanding. So to lose, and by the way, you know, I talk about, you know, Evgeny Malkin probably going to miss a pretty good chunk of time at the start of the season. Look at what Jared McCann has done when he's filled in as their second line center. He's put up great numbers over the years. So now you're losing that as well. So I'm a little baffled by that decision. I'd like to see Ron Hextall's plan unfold, but on the surface, I didn't like that deal at all.
And that's the mystery of what is Hextall going to do.
Yeah.
If do you think it'll be a quiet next week or two, or very busy?
Well, anything is in play. I don't know that they will do anything major. I suspect they will make a couple of deals. I would expect a bottom six forward, probably of the large variety, if I had to guess. I do think they will give Zach Aston-Reese a new contract. So you'll see stuff like that. Are they going to do anything major? I haven't been told that, but, you know, this is a new regime. And Ron Hextall, you know, he's not telling people what he's going to do. He's not telling anybody. I've talked with a number of people in the organization who have no idea what he's going to do. So there is an element of mystery there. This isn't Jim Rutherford. You know, you just give Jim a call and he would literally tell you what he was going to do. I know that drove people nuts. From my standpoint, I loved it. It was what's best for business. But, you know, so there's an element of mystery there. They'll do something. How big? I don't know yet.
I can just imagine Jim Rutherford playing poker or something like that. He would just tell us, like, look at all my cards, guy. Hey, look at all my cards here. Here's what I want. Here's what I'm going to do. So, yeah.
I know.
It's funny. But, there's a quote from Hextall. He said they didn't expect to fit any of the top free agents under the cap. but added, quote, I suspect there's going to be players in August that aren't signed. We'll just evaluate things on a day-to-day basis as we move along. So, really, it you know, at least he's saying that we might not do much.
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely is. He's kind of setting the stage for that, I guess. It's kind of funny to me, by the way, the same people, like the same people who would always complain that the Jim made too many trades. They're the same people. What is Hextall doing? Why was he hired? And I will say, it's a horribly difficult spot that Ron Hextall finds himself in.
Yeah.
Because on one level, you know, he is expected to replenish their system, which is pretty barren right now. But at the same time, it's, oh, by the way, try to win another cup. That's hard to do. I mean, it's almost impossible. And it's never been made all that clear what the Penguins' plan is to pull all this off. They didn't give up much to get Jeff Carter, so that was kind of a no-brainer. This is where we really see the plan, if they really do still consider themselves contenders, or if they think it is time to rebuild. And I think they still consider themselves contenders. I really do. And I'm not saying that's the wrong way to feel. That is how they should probably feel given their current roster. But it will be interesting to see what they do.
Now, one thing that's kind of different this year is we're seeing a lot of weird deals, basically because of the flat cap. I've never seen a trade before this year where the trade was, we're going to give you this player and this and this and this, and in return, nothing. So basically, it's a gift.
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly never seen a Vezina goaltender during that kind of a deal. But it does go to show what an incredibly big deal cap space is. And I always tell people this. Like, this is going to be a story with Brian Rust this season. Brian Rust has 1 year left on his deal. And I don't know if the Penguins will re-sign him or not. I'm sure they would like to. But, you know, you got to be careful with how much money you give people, right? So people are going to say, oh, my God, you can't let Brian Rust walk for nothing. Well, sure you can. You get his cap space when he leaves. Now, in his case, it isn't that much. It's only 3.5. So maybe you're more likely to trade someone like him. But the point is, but when you have a player who makes a good bit of money, you know, sometimes it's not always best to trade him for a couple of prospects with 2 years left on his deal. Sometimes it's best just to let that player run his course and play out his contract. And, oh, look, we've got $6 million to play with in free agency now. That's the way it works. And you're going to see that more and more with the flat cap.
Yeah, and speaking of weird deals, Marc-Andre Fleury traded to Chicago. I think the first question is, if they basically gave him away, why didn't they give him away to Pittsburgh?
Well, a fair question. Maybe it's a financial thing. I've been told by some people in the Penguins organization, yeah, they would love to have a Marc-Andre Fleury reunion, but not with him making $7 million a year. That's an issue for them because of some of the other things they have to get in line under the salary cap. So maybe that's part of it. Deal. I mean, I guess it didn't come together that quickly, but it's fascinating that it happened today of all days, the day before free agency opens. That tells me Vegas was desperate to get rid of his salary because they're planning on doing something really big when free agency opens. So I get it, I guess, from their standpoint. The interesting thing now to me is Chicago. They had to have known he didn't want to play there. It's been made very clear. Right. I mean, his agent, Alan Walsh, is already teasing retirement, for God's sake. Hey, he doesn't want to be in Chicago. Everybody knows this. And I'm not saying that he for sure won't play there. I mean, he's a good guy. Maybe he would, you know, come around and decide to do it. But it's pretty clear he doesn't want to be there. So Chicago, like, I don't know. I've never been a general manager. But in my experience, especially when it's a future Hall of Famer, a huge name who makes a lot of money, who's at the end of his career, you're going to, you know, touch base with this guy and say, hey, do you want to play here? Like, you don't just make that trade without talking with his representation. You know, so, but I guess you can argue, hey, Chicago just got a big asset and they didn't have to give up anything to get him. So maybe their plan all along is to flip him in a trade. I haven't been told that, but it makes more sense than just acquiring a guy and letting him retire.
I think it goes back to what you said. How valuable is cap space?
Yeah.
Chicago had the cap space. They got a valuable asset for nothing. Now, right. And you're right. Anybody that knows Fleury knows that. I mean, heck, when he was when he went to Vegas, I mean, like he consulted everybody and he checked to make sure because it was to see what was best for his family. So right. Yeah, he's not just gonna be a journeyman that just goes anywhere. He's gonna look out for his family. And yeah, coming back to Pittsburgh would make sense. But yeah, it's a good deal for Chicago if you could turn around and flip him for an actual trade and get actual things back for him.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and I know Fleury pretty well, and I know the people around him pretty well. And it's been made quite clear to me that he was happy to stay in Vegas, and Pittsburgh was really the only other team he'd be interested in playing for. This is a guy who is in the Hall of Fame. We know this, okay? He's made about $75 million in his career. He's got 3 cups. He's done everything there is to do. Now, he is 3rd on the all-time wins list behind only Brodeur and Roy. And for a kid from Quebec to have a chance to pass one of those, if not both, that's a big deal. Of course it is. So it's not like he has no reason to keep playing, but I think he would only want to keep playing on his terms at this point. And Chicago has to be aware of that, but you're right. If you're Chicago, okay, you don't have to give up anything. If you can flip him to Pittsburgh for a couple of draft picks, for a Marcus Pedersen, if you like him, for a Tristan Jarry, if you like him, maybe a Brian Rust, even though that might seem like a lot to give up. But if the Penguins aren't really serious about bringing him back the next year, maybe they'd consider that. If you're Chicago, it makes a lot of sense. And you know what's funny? I should mention this. Back in October, Jim Rutherford had a deal done to bring Marc-Andre Fleury back to Pittsburgh. It was done. The only thing that it required was the consent of ownership in Vegas. And Bill Foley, who owns Vegas, told the general manager that he was not going to trade Marc-Andre Fleury, and that he particularly was not going to trade him back to Pittsburgh because he liked the idea of Fleury, you know, being remembered as a Vegas goaltender more than a Pittsburgh goaltender. That was a big deal to him. So maybe he just didn't want to do business with Pittsburgh. I don't know. And then there is this, Joey. And you know, again, I think I mentioned this earlier. I don't know what Ron Hextall thinks of Marc-Andre Fleury. I assume he's a fan. I think most people would be, but I haven't been told that. Ron doesn't tell people that kind of thing. I know Mario Lemieux would love it.
Exactly.
I know David Morehouse would love it. It doesn't mean Hextall, and I bet Mike Sullivan would too. And I know Sidney Crosby would. So, hey, those are a lot of powerful people, but those still aren't the people who are hired to make this decision. So it's all very interesting.
But it wouldn't be the first time Mario said, hey, go get this guy.
Well, that's true.
So,
you know the Sergei Gonchar story?
No, what's that?
Craig Patrick, he was the GM in 05 after the lockout, and he wasn't used to spending money. He really wasn't, because for years the Penguins were broke. And all of a sudden, with the new CBA, they had this money to spend. And the first 3 days of free agency, he didn't get anybody. And Mario finally walked into his office, and he said, Craig, let's go get some people. And Patrick was like, is it okay if I really spend this money? And Mario was like, yes. And as the story was told to me, and of course you wouldn't know the story because I probably shouldn't even be telling it, but whatever. As the story was told to me, Mario literally like pointed at Gonchar's name on a piece of paper. He said, he's good. We should get him. And that's what they did.
Wow. You know, it's just funny how things like that work. It's like, you know, you think there's all this, you know, analytics and all these negotiations and stuff. And sometimes it's simple as, hey, go get that guy.
But, yeah, that's right. Now in some organizations, analytics might rule the day, but not in the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2005, I promise.
it just floors me how, okay. So there's that story of, you know, Vegas wanted to keep Fleury and veto a trade to Pittsburgh because they wanted him to, you know, be associated with them. And then the way they let him go, they didn't even tell him. He finds out on Twitter. My goodness, how disrespectful.
Yeah, it was. And I have the privilege of getting to go on the road to every game the Penguins play pretty much. So I've been to Vegas a handful of times to see the Penguins play there. And I bring this up because until you've been there and have seen it, it's hard to explain how big of a deal Fleury is there. He is their guy. I mean, he is literally an icon in that franchise. When you go through the casinos a couple of hours before Golden Knights games, all of the poker dealers and the blackjack dealers, every single one of them is wearing a number 29 jersey. Literally.
Wow.
There are billboards in Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury's smiling face. When they introduce the starting lineup there, they cheer for him twice as loud as they cheer for anyone else. I mean, he is everything to that franchise. And because, as you know, he's not just a Hall of Fame goaltender. He's an entertainer. Yes. You know, we all see Fleury rubbing the post when the post saves him and all of his antics. That stuff flies everywhere, but it really flies in Vegas. That's a town that likes to be entertained. And he was perfect. I mean, he was the perfect personality for that team. So this is everything about the decision was strange. And I understand they have two goalies who make a lot of money there. But to treat him that way, of all people,
yeah,
Marc-Andre Fleury, who I will tell you is probably the nicest human being I've met in professional sports. And I've dealt with a lot of nice ones. Sidney Crosby certainly high on that list too, but Fleury, you know, I've had people say, you just cheer for him because you like him. Like, people always say that to people in my line of work. And typically that's all crap. But in this case, it's actually true. Like, I admit it. Yes, I like him so much on a personal level. I am happy when he does well. I am. He's just a different kind of dude. So for him to be treated like that on his way out the door in Vegas, to me, that's unforgivable.
It really is. I mean, I saw you write something about Vegas. Basically, never has an expansion team in any sport been handed more. And how that's been handled is an interesting thing. I mean, they basically were an instant contender.
Yes.
It's crazy how they just went from expansion team new to the league to, oh, hey, we're going to the cup.
Well, there's never been anything like it. And, you know, and part of that for old guys like us, we remember how pathetic Ottawa and San Jose were when they entered the league in the early 90s. Hey, it was painful to watch. That's a great Mario story, actually. His back was bad. He hadn't played in a while. Penguins were in California. They had a game at San Jose. Even though his back wasn't good, he flew out to San Jose just for that game because he knew it'd be a big night. He had like a goal and five assists that night. Like, then he flew right back to Pittsburgh.
God, yeah. I think San Jose came in like in the early 90s, like 92.
I think it's 92, something like that. Yeah.
Basically, at the Penguins heyday when they had maybe their greatest team of all time.
Right.
I remember each of those games were like 7-0, 8-2, 9-1, 10-2.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. No, I mean, that's
so funny.
That's one of Mark Madden's favorite stories. There was a game out there that Mark, when he was covering the Penguins for the Post-Gazette, Mario, I want to say it's a 7-point game, 7 or 8 points. It was one of the big, I think he had a goal and 6 assists that game. And Mario was in kind of a bad mood after the game. And Madden goes up to him and he says, why are you upset? And Mario said, please don't put this in the paper, but like, I didn't play that great tonight. I should have like 10 points. Like, I'm a little irritated at myself. Like, well, so that's the Sharks and the Senators. They were so pathetic when they came into the league. And so was Tampa for a while, that the NHL was like, man, we don't want this again. We want these guys to be good right away. And I'm not saying the NHL was wrong. I get it from a business standpoint for sure. But Vegas was given so much. I mean, my God, the expansion rules, the way they changed, you knew the roster was good. Then you get a Hall of Fame goalie still in his prime. And then, you know, the way they were able to take advantage of the rules, teams were so afraid of what they were going to take. Hey, don't take this guy. We'll give you a second round pick not to.
Right.
Like, stuff like that. Like, it was garbage, really. Right. The way it went down. And they still, you know, they didn't have to lose anybody to the expansion draft this time around. They are loaded with prospects just because of all the rules they were able to take advantage of. So, they were given a lot.
That was odd that they didn't have to give up anybody, but then again, they didn't get a piece of the expansion fee that Seattle paid.
Yeah, I mean, everything's a little bizarre, honestly. and it's, you know, Seattle on paper is not that impressive right now at all.
Yeah.
But apparently they're looking to make some serious moves when the market opens. So they still have, I think, about $30 million in cap space. I think that was Ron Francis's plan all along, because you got the flat cap. A lot of guys are going to be available that wouldn't have been available otherwise. And, you know, yeah, so they might be able to make some hay. I'm very curious to see what Ronnie does.
So then the question becomes, who else might the Penguins get rid of? There are some big contracts. And we're talking Pettersson, Matheson, Zucker. But one that really surprised me was John Marino. You think he might be gone?
Well, no, I don't. But I'm under the impression that this regime isn't quite as wild about him as Jim Rutherford was. And listen, Marino didn't have as good of a season last year. It wasn't bad, but I thought he was pretty average. Whereas, you know, in his rookie season, he was unbelievable. I mean, he was pretty close to rookie of the year material. He just happened to come along in the same year as Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes. So that made it tough. And Adam Fox, I think so. Okay, that's tough. But it's conceivable that the one issue with Marino, and as good as he is, you know, he's not a big guy. He's not a physical guy. And I know a lot of fans roll their eyes at that. But Ron Hextall and Brian Burke don't. They want more of those types. And, you know, he's never going to give you that. That's the one thing he doesn't bring. So I don't think they will trade John Marino, but I don't think he's untouchable. I think if they could really get a huge return for him, it's probably something they would consider. But I, you know, among the names you mentioned, I don't think they're interested in dealing Matheson. His contract's bad. You know it. I know it. But they like him. They think he played pretty well last season. And I actually tend to agree. I thought as the year went on, he played really well. So I get that. Pettersson and Zucker, however, are two guys they would probably like to move on from. And again, Zucker, especially, he's a good player. But is he $5.5 million a year good? I don't think so. I don't think many people think that. He just hasn't fit in with Pittsburgh for whatever reason. He doesn't have a whole lot of chemistry with Crosby and Malkin. So, yes, they would love to deal him. And Pettersson, you know, he's just okay. He's just an average defenseman who doesn't really have any offensive upside. You're paying him a little more than $4 million a year, and you got P.O. Joseph ready to play. That's just too much. So I think of all those guys, Pettersson's the most likely to go. But I would expect one of those guys that we mentioned will go, really, for, you know, salary cap relief more than anything else.
So – as of right now, they lost McCann, Tanev, probably CeCe.
Yeah.
Is there anyone they could get to replace them on the cheap? Is there anyone in this system that they could replace them with?
Well, there are players in the system. I mentioned P.O. Joseph. We know he can jump into the blue line. Now, he's left-handed, so he doesn't play the same side as CeCe. And he's not, you know, CeCe is a fairly physical guy, fairly big guy. P.O. doesn't bring you those things, so that's an issue. As for forward, Samuel Poulin, I would think, would be ready to play in the NHL at some point this season, probably. And he brings some things to the table that the Penguins are interested in. He, you know, he's a big kid. He's not what I would consider like an overly physical player. Well, he's not Tom Wilson. Thank God there's only so many of them, or we'd all be in trouble. But he's a big kid. He is, and he's had a couple of years to develop now. I think he could be ready to play. Nathan Legarrier, who's a right wing, different style player, but he's a pretty big kid too. And they really like him. I mean, he's just got a great release. He should be a guy who projects as a good goal scorer in the NHL. So between one of those two, even, if just one of those two, you know, by March or April can be a regular contributor somewhere in the top four lines. To me, that's a really big deal. I don't think they want to spend a ton of money in free agency. I think they'll get somebody. You're going to hear the name Brandon Saad a lot, partially because he's from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But would he be willing to take a little less to play in Pittsburgh? Maybe. Is he a good player? Yeah. Would he fit in with the Penguins style-wise? Yeah, he would. He's only 28. And I've heard, I know Brandon, I know people close to him. I've heard that that's something that he would certainly consider, assuming he doesn't go back to Colorado. And Colorado's got his hands full with Landeskog and Grubauer, so I don't think Saad's their top priority right now. So that's a name to consider. The only problem with Brandon, you know, somebody might just offer him way more than the Penguins could.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's a good player. He'll score you 20, 25 goals. He's got a couple of Stanley Cup rings. He's only 28. That you know, you don't want to get into a bidding war if you're the Penguins, because you really can't. But a name to at least consider that I know he would be interested in playing here if the price were right, put it that way.
What about Zach Parise?
You know, they've always liked him. He and Sidney Crosby, really good friends. They both played at Shattuck St. Mary's in Minnesota. I don't believe they played at the same time, but they have that connection because they both played there when they were 15. So they know each other. He can still play, but I would be very careful with how much money you would give him. He gets hurt a lot. He's starting to break down. And to me, he's not a top-tier player anymore. If he's on your third line, that's great. Second line, maybe. But I just don't think he's anywhere close to the dynamic player that he was 5 or 10 years ago. So he's a guy that they'll pay attention to. But I don't see them signing him on day one of free agency, put it that way. If he's still around after a week and he only wants, you know, a couple of million or something, yeah, they'd probably consider him. I'm sure they would. But again, it strikes me as a guy that someone's just going to give more money to than he really deserves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I guess you could also say to him, it's like, hey, dude, you already made enough money. You got that crazy contract.
Easy for us to say, but
it's right.
And I always tell people I say he's made $100 million. Why should he care? And I know I said that about Fleury too, but you know, if I'm Fleury, I wouldn't retire. You know why? There's still $7 million out there. That's why. Maybe I won't need that money, but maybe my great, great, great grandkid could use it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to turn that down. All right, sir. Oh my, I just have a feeling tomorrow is going to be a lot of fun.
Well,
and Penguins Twitter will handle it very calmly and won't go crazy at all.
Well, I would expect nothing less. I would expect a completely rational and reserved and a non-judgmental tone from Penguins Twitter. And I'd be shocked if we saw otherwise, but that's okay. It's part of the fun. You know, sometimes I get irritated by that, but then I'm reminded that, you know, I cover this team and people really give a damn about them. So there is something cool about that, even if some of the responses are a little over the top.
Yeah. I mean, people were going crazy about losing McCann and Tanev. It's like, oh, okay. I think Rob Rossi said that. It's like, oh, you guys care about other things than just, you know, Crosby and Malkin. That's cool.
No, it's true. I didn't realize how many ladies loved Brandon Tanev in town until he left. I noticed everyone on my timeline who was especially upset was of the female persuasion. That's okay.
Yeah, that's not my subject. I mean, anytime I think about Tanev, I think about that picture of him looking like he saw a ghost, and he claims that he did see a ghost, which is
right.
And that's, I just love that. I mean, I think that's not a new thing with him. I think like anytime he takes a picture, he has that look, which is just brilliant. Well,
they're gonna miss him.
Yeah.
I mean, make no mistake, that guy's a hell of a player. He really is. So I thought he was their best bottom six player, quite honestly. So we will see if they're able to replace him. It won't be easy though.
I was gonna say I'm kind of worried about the fourth line now, but the fourth line wasn't gonna be the fourth line anyway, because Bluger's probably gonna be the third line center, right?
That's right. When the season starts, yes. When Malkin's back, that will be back to being the fourth line. We'll see. You know, I think Aston Reese is okay. I don't think he's anything special personally. I know the analytic community loves him. I've never been blown away. He's very good defensively. You'd like to see him score a little more regularly. But that said, Aston Reese and Bluger, that's two-thirds of a pretty darn good fourth line. They will try to replace Tanev, but he brought a lot to the table. He really did.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, sir. Hey, thanks for the time.
Joey, it is my pleasure as always. Take care, man.
Awesome. All right. I'll see you.